you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
You know what? You're my greatest love of all.
You know what?
The greatest love.
You know what? I will always love you.
Hi, Jillian Bezzavalli.
Hi, Patrick Hines.
So look, we're on tour. The tour's officially started. We did our opening night at the Wilbur in Boston. It was amazing.
It was amazing.
Our next show is Charlotte on June 17th, but that sold out.
Oh.
But then after that, Denver, July 13th. There are still tickets left. Come and see us. The show is outrageous.
And then we're going to Chicago like 2 days after,
yeah,
right?
You can find the rest of the dates. I'm not going to do them all. You can find them all on truecrimeobsessed.com. Click on the See Us Live link. I'm just saying, are you having fun?
I'm having a grand old time.
Okay, good. what are we talking about today?
All right, so it's a show called What Really Happened on Discovery Plus, and this episode is called The Final Days of Whitney Houston. This has been very highly requested. There's not really a documentary about what happened to her, the crime of it all.
Yes, yes.
Unfortunately, so this is the best we could do, but this is a case that people have been begging us to cover for, like, since the beginning.
She was America's sweetheart, the girl next door, and our reigning pop princess. We called her Whitney, and she was known as The Voice. Whitney Houston's soaring fame and well-publicized demons were center stage for the entire world to see. Tonight, we explore how this amazing performer came to a heartbreaking end. Fans were always pulling for Whitney. And in early 2012, it looked like she was making a comeback. New man, new music, and a new movie. The film was a remake of Sparkle, and it marked a return to her roots, home to the church, back to the power and promise of gospel.
So everyone thought that this Sparkle movie was going to be great and that it was going to be Whitney's comeback. And finally, right, she could exhale. And then came the Grammys.
It opens with just kind of like a synopsis.
We're not wasting any time. We're diving right in.
They just say it'd been a long, tough road for Whitney Houston.
I know.
But in 2012, she was poised for a comeback. Quote, new man, new music, new movie, Sparkle.
Sparkle.
So it's a remake. I had to look it up. Irene Cara was in the original in 1976.
Yeah. Fame.
Sparkle.
She's from Fame,
don't
right?
Don't you dare. I love Fame. And I love
what
Irene Cara.
What did I say about Fame? I literally said the word Fame. Like they say, you know, in the movie and television
record.
Show Fame.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fame. I'm gonna live. But Jordan Sparks is in the remake with Whitney Houston?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God. You know, they give us a little bit about this Sparkle movie, right? Where it was a cult classic, especially in the African-American community. It's her return to her gospel roots.
Right, because we get a clip of Whitney talking about like how natural it is for her to sing gospel music.
Yes.
We haven't said anything about her perfect voice yet.
No.
I feel like we should go into that. Like,
I know.
I can't believe we're talking about this.
I know.
And that this is Whitney's story because her voice.
I mean, you know, we get this throughout. Everyone talks about like where they were when they heard whatever Whitney Houston.
Yeah.
I will never forget the first time I heard I Will Always Love You. I think it was a freshman in high school.
Like her version of it?
Yes. And I saw the video on MTV or VH1
it was
or whatever.
Beautiful.
And I just remember being like, I didn't know it was a Dolly Parton song originally.
Uh-huh.
I just thought like Whitney was giving us another gift.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, I can see myself sitting in the chair watching the video.
I have like,
and the chills. I know.
Because she was so beautiful in it. She was wearing that suit and
yes.
She was sitting and she was leaning and she
yes.
just looked so in command and so in power. I remember seeing the I Want to Dance with Somebody video and she was just so beautiful.
I know.
She was so like fun and her hair was like big and up.
Iconic.
And she was like bopping around and it was just, I was like, who's this? Like, what is this?
Can I just say my favorite TikTok fail video
oh God.
Now is they do that, like, you know that moment in I Will Always Love You where it goes, boom.
Yes.
And
do I know that moment? It's the moment.
There's this one where there's like this little kid in one of those, like, it's like one of those like game rooms where it has one of those spinning things that knock you over. And it's like a 3-year-old kid.
A spinning thing that knocks
it's
you
like,
over.
It's like a game where like you have to like get out of the way of the thing.
Okay.
Whatever.
You lost me, but whatever.
And it the thing swings around and it hits the kid. Boom! And the kid falls. And it's so good.
Yeah. Also, don't do that at karaoke because he can't.
No.
Just don't do it.
Who in their right mind?
Oh, well, they're never in their right mind. No, they're inebriated.
It's some gay queen.
Yeah.
2 a.m.
There was one person I remember who did, when I was bartending at the karaoke bar, Queen started playing. And I was like, oh, God damn it. But he killed it.
Oh, God.
And it's like every once in a blue moon, someone comes in and you hear the start of a song and you're like, God damn it. Shots for everybody. And then it's like celebratory shots because they nail it.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Well, we got to talk about the Grammys. They were February 11th, 2012. We're starting at the end and we're going to go back.
Yeah. And I also want to say her friend Kirk, Whitney's friend Kirk, who was in the band. We'll get into him in a little bit.
He's the famous saxophonist who's got the sax solo. Is that
I
what
was
you were
gonna
waiting
say,
for?
Yeah. Because it just says Whitney's friend.
I know.
His lower third is her friend, which is true.
Yes.
But he was in the band. Look him up.
I know.
He has been in so much stuff, but that famous sax solo, which is almost as famous as the bump, is Kirk. But Kirk is here to say, like, this whole comeback talk, because everyone's like, oh, the comeback.
Yes.
Not to be confused with the amazing show, The Comeback.
Well, and he's also the, yes, of course.
And I don't want to say that. but Kirk was like, I don't like this idea. Can't she just be,
because
what's with the pressure?
He also thinks that, like, it was too soon. That, like,
she's not ready.
She needed much more help than she got. She needed better people around her. There was financial interest for the people around her, and they didn't want to rebel against her in fear that they might be cut out.
You're the ATM for your inner circle. Everyone wants you to work. They don't want you to take care of yourself.
So the thing about that is, like, she was surrounded by enablers and people who didn't have her best interests at heart. At the same time, you can't help someone who doesn't want to be helped.
Yeah.
And then when you're that famous, and we learned that she would just, like, fire people if there was any pushback at all. Like, no one wanted to get off the money train.
She was just so deep in her addiction.
Right.
And it's so fucking sad. And we learned the night of the Grammys, this is, like, the night she dies. And these are the Grammys in 2012, and we learn that, like, she's at the Beverly Hilton Hotel. Several media people see her at the bar getting hammered.
They use the word hammered.
I just gotta say, if you're a bartender and Whitney Houston shows up at the bar, every time a manager yells at you or some guest is a dick, this is the moment that God is repaying you.
Right.
Whitney Houston is at the bar getting drunk. What a dream.
And then, but also, that's the thing about being as famous as Whitney Houston is, which is like 5 other people were that famous at the time.
Exactly.
But, like, you don't say no to her at the bar.
You could never.
She would get you fired.
Oh,
and I'm not saying that in a bad, but, like, when someone is that rich and powerful and also suffering the way she was.
I'll tell you, like, I was a bartender for, like, 15 years. That's a really hard needle to thread.
It is.
Because at least in New York.
And you're talking about cutting people off or not serving them.
Cutting people off.
In
New York, the law, as I was always told, is that they don't sue the restaurant. They sue the bartender that overserved them.
Yes.
So that was always a really scary thing for me.
Huge.
Like, cutting people out, it's really hard. But we also learned
Whitney was erratic in the hotel, to say the least. She was found hanging out. Several media people spotted her at the bar getting hammered.
Houston was seen skipping around a ballroom and doing handstands near the hotel pool.
Doing handstands near the pool?
Right.
She's 46 years old and doing handstands. You go, girl.
Right? But just be careful because you can slip and fall.
I know.
No running near the pool, everybody. I know I'm not a mother, but please don't run near the pool.
Or do handstands.
It's very dangerous.
Maybe she was doing the handstands in the grass near the pool. Yeah. Let's hope for that.
However, handstands in the pool, great. And everyone watch the person doing the handstand in the pool because you know you come up. Hey, Mom, were you watching?
I know.
Hey, Patrick, were you watching? If I'm doing a handstand in the pool, I want everyone watching because it might be perfect.
You know what?
And I want everyone to see it. And also, if I ask you to play Mermaids with me, just say yes. We're playing Mermaids.
What is Mermaids? Is that Marco Polo?
No, you just, like, play mermaids in the pool.
Oh, you know who would love to do that?
Daisy.
You? Daisy. Daisy would love that.
It's the easiest game in the world. You just play mermaids.
Yeah,
it's
okay, great.
So super fun. But if someone asks you, you say yes.
We also learned that night she goes into the gift shop and sees a tabloid that has an article about her and goes ballistic.
Which, I can't blame her.
Who's the fucking asshole? Like, when Whitney Houston checks in, don't you go into the gift shop and take out all the National Enquirers with the lesbian headlines? Don't you take them out?
I guess not.
Like, what an idiot.
What are we supposed to do? This is the world.
I don't agree
with the National Enquirer. I'm not in the business of defending them, but like, what are we supposed to do
what
here?
What do you do when you're the gift shop employee and you see fucking Whitney Houston walk in?
I don't know.
You got one eye on the Houston at the door. You got one eye on the Enquirer. And like, what are you going to do?
You stand there and you freeze. And you hope that you fade into the background and no one notices you. You hope for invisibility. You pray.
Just you know
don't
what?
Let her see me. You don't move.
I know.
Don't even
I know.
Breathe. It's like that moment in Jurassic Park. Just everyone stay still.
You write the sign on the napkin that says back in five.
Barely. You don't even move.
I know. But then we hear the 911 call, and they don't even know, the person making the call doesn't even know it's Whitney Houston.
No. And like the paramedics get to her room immediately, and Whitney wasn't breathing. And she dies that night.
Yeah.
And we learn, you know, fans around the world obviously are devastated. And Dr. Drew says, like, still to this day, like, we don't know exactly for sure the cause of death, but we do know that drugs were involved.
And we'll get more on that later when we get the autopsy. But, like, he says...
The singer was found face down and was underwater for as long as an hour. The most surprising new information was this. The water in the hotel bathtub where Houston drowned was very, very hot. I'm talking in excess of 93 degrees.
When they found her,
yes,
the water was 93.5 degrees and she was there for an hour.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
And they say, like, the temperature of the water is very suspicious.
Yeah.
And now they're like, is there foul play involved?
She also had abrasions on her forehead, abrasions on her face, and she was completely alone. So I don't even know how someone knew to call. Maybe, like, room service showed up or something,
uh-huh,
or someone just let themselves into her room.
Oh, God.
But she was completely alone.
It's so fucking sad. There's a vigil outside the hotel. People who should not be singing are singing a medley of her songs. And they're just kind of singing it for the camera. Like, it's L.A. That part felt very gross to me.
Well, okay. So it led to a lot of conspiracy theories right away. But do you remember Jane Mitchell, this host?
Oh, yes. Jane Velez Mitchell, of course.
She was in the
HLN.
Casey Anthony thing that we covered. I'm sorry, the Kaylee Anthony thing that we covered. And she's like, I was right there. So I just hopped on down the 405 and just was there to be the first on the scene.
I know. And she's just walking
hopped
around.
On the 405.
I know. I do love Jane Velez Mitchell.
Yeah.
She seems like she seems like she's in charge. If I'm at a cocktail party and it's her and Diane Diamond, I'm sitting with Jane.
Jane wins every goddamn time.
Sorry, Diane.
But it was just, I'm not sorry.
You know, Diane's got the real expensive Chardonnay. Like, that's the one thing I feel like we can count on Diane for.
She can keep it.
Totally.
She can have every last drop.
Every Q&A I do anywhere, people are like, what is your feud with Diane Diamond?
You explain it almost every time. It's out there. Like, we're not hiding it.
I know.
You guys got like a DM fight about politics.
It's
very simple.
It's true.
She was like, I'm very disappointed in you. Like,
she literally came
for you.
She tweeted me and said, have me on your cast, your apostrophe cast. I know.
But like, cut the shit, Diane.
I used to love you, Diane.
Cut the shit.
Anyway.
You know? It was a very, very emotional scene. Everyone is there. Fans are there to mourn her and celebrate her. Lots of candles. And now we're talking about the power of her voice in so many, just like how she sings, like her voice is literally and figuratively powerful.
But also the ubiquitousness, I think that's a word,
sure,
of her voice. You literally, like one
it's
Rolling
everywhere.
Stones reporter says he didn't like her music, so he would turn the channel and it would just be a different song on another station.
You couldn't turn on any radio station and get away from it. And at a certain point, for me, it was, I want to dance with somebody. You just say, like, I give up. This is pretty great.
I couldn't beat her, so I joined her.
Yeah, he was like, oh, this is pretty good. Yeah, guy.
How are you going to not love, I want to dance with somebody.
I want to feel the heat with somebody.
Yeah, I want to dance with somebody.
She's just like so beautifully happy in that video,
yes,
in that music video specifically. She's just having the time of her life.
Yeah, and somebody says, like, in the beginning of her story, like, her music and her image were immaculate. That,
right,
like, her, you know, it was a lot of luxury, and it was, like, the sound of her music, and you would see her, like, in white furs,
right,
and, like, glimmering diamonds or whatever.
Yeah, they had that very, like, soft filter on her. Not like she needed a filter, but it looked very, like, glamour shot-y,
yeah,
you know, that very, even the video for I Will Always Love You had that little softness to it.
You know, and the thing is, they get into it a little bit, but like, for a black woman to be in that time elevated to this.
Of course.
Just like the absolute most gorgeous, most celebrated, most like beloved person. It was rare.
Yeah.
You know?
She was so loved and so successful. She is in like the one name category.
Yes.
You say Whitney, everyone knows
of
who you mean.
Of course.
And that's huge.
I know.
Like, not a lot of people could do that.
Also, just objectively, what a great fucking name.
Whitney.
God.
You really really, it's, you can say it like with gusto. You
I know
mean
a
it.
Guy named Whitney.
Okay.
That's a good name for a guy, too.
Is he great?
I don't know him that well.
Oh, okay.
We once had a Ooh. Thing over a boy, but Whitney seems very nice.
How interesting. So now we get the Whitney Houston story. She grew up in New Jersey, and she came from one hell of a showbiz family.
This is unreal.
I think out of anyone, Whitney Houston definitely has a pedigree. You look at her mother, Sissy. You look at her cousin, Dionne Warwick, both classic, iconic voices.
They don't really get into who Sissy Houston is, except that she's a legend.
Yeah.
She's like a legendary backup singer.
But an American, like, soul and gospel singer.
And like, everybody's favorite person to work with in the business. Like, she's known and respected, and everyone... She was never, like, famous, but she went to all the parties.
Yeah, like, she was singing backup for Elvis and Aretha Franklin.
Yes.
Elvis and Aretha, two first-name basis people.
100%. But her cousin is Dionne fucking Warwick.
Such hits as...
Oh, my God.
No, no. Wait to send us la 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 la.
Do you know who is the biggest Dionne Warwick fan?
You?
Stephen Lee Tipton.
Great.
He loves Dionne Warwick so much. We just were on a car trip going to Cape Cod for my book party thing.
Yeah.
We listened to Dionne Warwick like most of the way.
Did you listen to That's What Friends Are For?
Well, no, I can't listen to that because it's so sad.
Did you listen to Don't Make Me Over?
Of course.
Did you listen to Say a Little Prayer?
Say a little prayer for you.
And also,
forever and ever, you'll stay in my heart and I will love you forever,
forever
and ever.
And ever.
We'll never will part and I will...
Always be heartbreak for you. It's my best friend's wedding, everybody. It's that scene in My Best Friend's Wedding where they're all singing it.
Also, My Car anytime Steve Tipton is in it.
Sure. It's great. Also, the fucking Psychic Friends Network.
Oh, my God. I forgot about
she
that.
She was the host of the Psychic Friends Network. And when I was looking up, I was like, that's her, right? The Psychic Friends Network? Dionne Warwick, the Psychic Friends Network.
Right.
And it came up, because for some reason, every time you Google someone, it's just like, what's their net worth? Which is, it's always a lie.
Uh-huh.
Like, I promise you, it's always fake. But apparently, according to the internet that I just said was fake, she made like $3 million a year hosting the Psychic Friends Network.
My favorite thing about the Psychic Friends Network was that line in Singles where Winona Ryder's like calling over and over and over again, and then like,
you mean Reality Bites?
Reality Bites. What did I say?
Singles. Oh, which to be fair,
Reality Bites. And
I
then
love Reality Bites.
She says something, and Jeanine Groff goes, "Who told you that? Your psychic friend."
Yeah. Oh my God. That's the best.
It's so good.
I fucking love that movie.
But she grew up in church, singing in church. That's where her mother grew up singing.
So when she was 11, she got up and sang a solo, just a little talk with Jesus, and people were just in awe.
It almost seems predestined that Whitney Houston is to go into the music business, to become a singer, and to become a star.
They were totally in awe of her. By the time she's 21, she's performing in clubs in New York City, which is massive.
She was performing in the Sweetwater Club, which I'd never heard of. I had to look it up. It was a 68th in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
I get so annoyed when I look up a club like that that's no longer there, and they only have pictures of people there, but there's no picture of the club or the interior. I couldn't find any good picture of like what
annoying.
It looked like. But this is where like apparently pre-star people would go sing there, and like Clive Davis would hang out looking for talent.
Look, Clive Davis is a music industry behemoth. He's signed so many people. He's also bi. He like recently came out as bisexual.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Clive, like what?
Like the Clive Davis.
He's bi?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
I know.
That and he came out?
Yeah.
We look.
No,
you
I
are,
just outed Clive Davis.
I am all about bi visibility. We need more of it.
Yeah.
Somebody got on me in one of the comments, somebody got mad at me for forgetting that you're bisexual. I never forget that you're bisexual.
What'd you say or not say?
I don't know. I made some joke about being like, oh, I forgot that you're bi. I never like actually forget it. Anyway, the point is
I'm not mad at you.
It's okay. This person can be mad at me if they want. We need more bi visibility. And if Clive Davis came out, then that's incredible.
Yeah, he's an incredible... Look him up. He's another one you should look up. Any famous person that you know is famous probably because of Clive Davis.
Yes.
In some way.
We'll get to this towards the end, but like she becomes more famous than him eventually and he can't help her. And that's crazy.
It's crazy.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Do you
love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts. So Whitney makes her TV debut on the Merv Griffin Show.
Merv Griffin was the most influential person in television back in the day with his talk show. He was like the Oprah Winfrey. And when young Whitney went on his show and sang the song Home, it just made waves.
Can I just get a little serious for 1 second?
Of course you can.
I was trying to understand what bothered me about that he was the Oprah of his time. It was so much harder for her to become Oprah than it was for him to become Merv Griffin.
He's a white guy, everybody.
Like a heavy black woman becoming the fucking like legendary legend of all time.
Another one-namer?
I know. But like to call him the Oprah of his time, it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. Like they both had big audiences and they were both successful in television. What she did was so much harder than what he did.
So much harder.
Couldn't put my thumb on why that comparison made me mad, but now I got it.
Oh, I'm so
now
glad you got there.
Yeah. Stop saying that.
Now I'm mad.
Okay, good.
Thanks.
Good. Well, at least now we're mad at the same
time. Okay, great. Yeah, so Whitney goes on the Merv Griffin Show, and she explodes.
It's a game changer. I mean, like, this is a time when there's 4 channels.
Yeah.
This was like, it wasn't unusual for TV shows to get, like, 40 million viewers or whatever.
Right. And so her debut self-titled album is a smash hit. It sells millions of copies. It wins a Grammy.
They talk about the cover. The cover is so iconic. It's her in that white dress with the slicked back hair, and it's like Whitney Houston. I mean, it is, I'm getting chills.
I know.
It's iconic.
I know. So much about her was.
And she just, like, this is where one of the talking heads says, like, she was this beautiful black woman looking so glamorous.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so unusual and wonderful.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And she wins a Grammy for it.
2 years later, she releases Whitney.
Her second album, 2 years later, just called Whitney. By then, she just needed one name, Whitney. That tells you how big she was.
I was like, she's self-titled again.
Yeah. Well, it was Whitney Houston, and now she's Whitney.
I know. My God.
Miss Jackson, if you're nasty, right? So she's super, super famous, but with fame comes a lot of scrutiny.
Can I just say, Wendy Williams is here from like an archival
moment.
Fuck
her.
And Wendy Williams goes, she appealed to black, white, and everyone in between. Everyone loved her. And I was like, wait a second. Are we going to talk about the world famous Wendy Williams, Whitney Houston phone interview?
Yes.
I didn't think we were going to talk about
we
it,
get
but
into
we
it.
Are going to talk about it.
Shut Holy up, Wendy shit. Williams. Shut up. How was that helpful? I'll save it for when we get there.
Is always my favorite. I just love
but
it so
that's
much.
That's the same as like no one wants to stop the money train, so we'll enable Whitney Houston. Like Wendy Williams is using her in this moment. We'll get to it.
100%.
Robin Crawford's here.
Okay. We only talk about Robin Crawford here for a minute, and I am a bad gay. I don't know as much about this as I should.
Okay. So she is introduced here as Whitney's, quote, personal assistant.
Yeah.
They met, you know, when they were teenagers and had a very big impact on her life. But we just sort of breeze by the fact that everyone thought that they were together in some kind of sexual relationship.
Yeah.
And Whitney is like being forced to answer for that. So
yes.
She goes on like Diane Sawyer or something and she's like,
I'm not gay and I'm not lesbian. I'm a mother. I'm a wife. I'm a daughter. Lesbian and gay, I'm not. Two titles I can't claim. I'm sorry. I just can't, you know?
I'm a wife and a mother and a daughter. And I'm like, Whitney, you can be all of those things.
I know.
And you know it.
You know, this is where I'm going to say, I saw a TikTok recently of Sissy Houston, years after Whitney's death, like
her mother.
Recently, her mother saying, like Oprah said, like, would you have accepted her if she was gay? She said, no.
Fuck that.
Sissy fucking Houston. And Oprah was shocked by it.
Really? What did Oprah say back?
I don't remember the exact exchange, but Oprah was like, really?
Oprah,
like,
the Merv Griffin of her time.
Don't
you dare. No, Oprah did her
own thing. I was shocked to hear Sissy Houston say that out loud.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Now, imagine Whitney.
Yeah.
knowing that her mom would not talk to her. And then also she's the most famous person in the world and she's getting scrutiny about everything to begin with.
And it's the fucking 80s. Even my mother wasn't out yet.
Right.
What I mean?
But the thing is, they were together.
Yes.
So Robin...
Tell me what you know, because I don't know the definitive answer here.
So Robin wrote a book and like she recently went on a lot of interviews. There's like a really great SiriusXM interview with her that I watched today where like all of this information's coming from, and she's doing like a press tour for her book. And they did have a very, very, very deep friendship. That it was professional, and sometimes it was sexual, and sometimes it was romantic, and sometimes they were just friends. They were in each other's lives.
I had one of those.
Yeah, since they were teenagers, like 16, 17 years old.
Oh my God, this is like mirroring my life.
They had a lot of love for each other, and they just would sort of, when you know each other for so long, sometimes they were sexual, sometimes they weren't, sometimes she was just the assistant, sometimes, I don't mean just the assistant.
I know what you mean.
But sometimes on trips, it would be like just a business trip, or sometimes it wouldn't be.
Yeah.
And they made an active choice to hide, I guess, like I'll call it like their non-platonic feelings, whatever that was, because Whitney thought it would destroy her. And she was right. And Robin said in an interview specifically, because I think they asked her, like, so like, was she gay? Are you gay? And she's like, we didn't talk about labels. Like, so I don't know if she was like bi or pan or gay or what it was, but like they just loved each other and sometimes it got sexy and then they felt that they had to hide it from the world.
I was going
to
say as long as everyone was happy, but like like, what are you going to do? Like, but it would have destroyed her.
It would have
absolutely have ended her career.
And so Don Lemon,
super gay Don Lemon,
says,
who knows? But guess what? Who really cares? I don't really care if Whitney Houston was gay, straight, bisexual, whatever. I just care that she could sing her ass off.
I don't care as long as she could sing her ass off. And I know what he's trying to say because I used to say that.
So this is where I correct people now. Because when somebody says, I don't care if they're gay. No. You got to care.
Right.
You got to care.
Because, and I realized what I used to say that, I didn't mean that I don't care.
Right.
So when
you mean it doesn't bother me or I'm not.
Or I support them anyway.
Exactly.
Or like her being whatever she was.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to put a label on it if she didn't. Has no effect on her talent or how her music affects me as a person.
Yes.
And how her art changed the world.
Yes.
Like that shouldn't matter. But to say you don't care, and I know that, because it's not what you mean, but you can't, don't say you don't care.
Right. I mean, it's actually like, it offends me when someone's like, I don't care if they're gay. No, you have to care.
Because it sounds dismissive.
Exactly.
But what the person is trying to say is that they support them, but it comes out wrong.
It comes out wrong.
You know?
And everyone's, most of the people are trying to do the best they can. So you get a pass. But I'm just saying, if you're one of those people who's like, I don't care that they're gay. No, say it differently.
Say it differently.
Say like, I support them. You know what I mean? Like, think about how you want to say that the next time it comes up and have that in the chamber.
Right. Anyway, Whitney Houston was on top of the world.
They say undeniably the 80s belonged to Whitney Houston.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. But then she gets booed at the Soul Train Awards.
Some critics were saying she didn't sound black enough. She had given away her roots.
It's horrible. It's kind of funny. You go, are they booing me? And they say, yeah. You go, oh, how nice. You know, you're not black enough for them. You know, I don't know. You're not R&B enough. You're very, very pop. The white audience have taken you away from them.
The white audience was taking her away from the black audience.
They were calling her like Whitey Houston and not Whitney Houston. And so like this was devastating to her because she's like, this is my family. This is my life. This is how I grew up. I grew up singing gospel music.
Yes.
Like she just felt so betrayed by her fans.
Can you imagine you're like on top of the world and like you're like at the Soul Train Awards and you get booed? I can't imagine, you know,
right.
And she's in an interview and she laughs it off kind of, but they say that she was like profoundly hurt by that.
And how could she not be?
Of course.
So that's 1989, and what else happens in 1989?
The same night. The same award show at the Soul Train Awards, she meets Bobby Brown.
And this story is odd.
Yes.
At least how we're hearing it. I don't know the truth. I wasn't there.
What if you had been at the Soul Train Awards in 1989? Your parents dropped you off there right after taking you to see Madonna's Blonde Ambition tour. Hey, Julie, we're going to drop you off at the Soul Train Awards. You can walk home.
And then I witnessed the Bobby Brown Whitney meet cute, which is not, I don't think, cute.
No.
So here's what we hear again. I don't know. If you're going to yell at me, then you better have been there.
Okay.
So
Heather Locklear yells at you.
Heather, calm down.
She's the one who like...
Jenny Garth.
It was so weird seeing Heather Locklear like introduce Whitney's category. I was like, Heather, what are you doing there?
Right. So Whitney apparently starts flirting with Bobby Brown. They're at different tables.
Yes.
So she apparently starts, quote, punching and hitting the back of his head. Okay. He turns around and could she have been like, oh, hey, like trying to get his attention? That's probably closer to what happened.
Uh-huh.
But he turns around and basically demands that she stop doing that.
And like gives her a look of like, don't you do that again. She's the biggest star in the world.
And she was impressed that he wasn't impressed that it was Whitney Houston trying to flirt with him.
Yes.
Yikes.
But they also say, somebody says,
you know, if you look at her trajectory, you can chart her fall directly to her meeting and falling in love with Bobby Brown.
You can chart her fall directly to her meeting and falling in love with Bobby
Brown. I mean,
this
was a mess. This was a complete fucking documented, abusive, horrible relationship.
I don't like, I wish I knew more about it because they like, it just seems like one of those relationships, like when it's good, it's really good. And when it's bad, it's really bad.
Yeah, that means it's not good.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I agree.
Like, it's just, that's not healthy to be the super high highs and the super low lows.
But the thing about a life like that is when you are that rich and that famous, you are surrounded by people who are only going to tell you what you want to hear.
Right.
You know?
So Kirk, the saxophone player
and
friend and musician, says, we were incredulous. We saw Bobby Brown as a distraction. So the minute he came onto the scene, the people closest to Whitney were like, oh, come on.
I know.
They saw it coming from a mile away.
But you know what, though? Like, all I'm saying is that, like, I can see from her perspective how, like, she has a person who she feels like is an equal. She's just been working. You know what I mean?
Right.
And, like, finally she's with a person that she can, like, let her hair down with a little bit or whatever.
But also, getting married would shut everyone up about those gay rumors.
And that's the biggest thing.
So, not, yes, he was super famous, my prerogative, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But it kind of would have been pretty great if she could just get married and put those rumors to end already.
Yeah.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.
So 1992 is a huge year for Whitney because she gets married to Bobby Brown, but shut up about that. The Bodyguard comes out.
I know.
Which means that I Will Always Love You came out.
I mean, it's just the height of everything. Like, I Will Always Love You was number one on the charts for 14 weeks.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, that song was, it's still everywhere.
Yeah.
You still, like, we took a 6-hour car trip the other day. I think I heard that song twice.
Well, right, sure.
You know what I mean?
Can I tell you my fun fact about
Please.
I Will Always Love You? Dolly Parton wrote that and Jolene in the same day.
I know.
Now,
I know.
That's
I know.
Like, every time it comes up, I'm like, can I tell you my fun fact? And everyone's like, I've heard it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
But one time, Dolly said that she did that. And then recently, she tried to backtrack a little. And she said, and I quote, well, I don't know if they were written on the same night. When we found the old tape, they were on the same cassette. So maybe it was a few days apart. To which I say, Dolly, sell yourself short. I don't care if it was a week apart. And Jolene and I Will Always Love You.
Did you write those songs in the same lifetime,
like,
Dolly? Nailed it.
Shut up. Shut your beautiful, perfect mouth. You must be protected. Don't do that. Because if I did that about something that I did, Dolly, you know what she would say to me? Don't you do that.
You know what I wish? I wish she had also written Fancy. I love that song. I love that song.
You give her an inch and you'll take 10 miles.
Do you know who
she wrote I Will Always Love You and Jolene in the same lifespan, and you say, you know what else I wish she could have done?
She's
putting kids through school and building, like, she's fine.
Number one,
she's
I will
amazing.
Tell you this, she wrote I Will Always Love You for a fucking musical, National Treasure. That was in the Best Little Whorehouse
in
Returns
Texas.
Or whatever. It's the sequel.
Oh, the Returns. And we're going back to the Best Little Whorehouse. The Best Little Whorehouse is so great. We're going back to
Can
it.
Can I just tell you one more thing while we're here on Reba? Because we're talking about Reba because she wrote Fancy. Do you know who is Reba McEntire's biggest fan?
Wait.
You do know.
Natalie
Grillo.
Yes, I knew that.
Natalie Grillo got into, so how do I even say this?
Natalie just like recently posted a picture of her with Reba,
here's
right?
The thing. Our friend Lee, who is a wonderful, amazing, accomplished person in her own right, but also happens to be the mother of Ian Armitage.
Who's young Sheldon. Or Ziggy from Big Little Lies.
From Big Little Lies, and also like Daisy's best friend.
Right.
So she's friends with all of us, and so they know Reba. So when Reba was doing a concert in New York, Lee reached out to Natalie, was like, you want to come and like sit in the box with us? Reba's boyfriend. And so like Natalie got to go to like Reba's party and hang out with
like
Reba.
As a friend of Reba's.
Yeah, as a friend of Reba's. Exactly.
She should put that on a resume. Not like she's ever leaving this job because we love her so much.
We love her.
But she should put that like in her Twitter bio.
Natalie Grillo, I'm obsessed.
So the bodyguard was huge for many reasons. But one of them was that this was an interracial relationship on screen. And it was like this movie was compared to Casablanca.
It cannot be overstated what a big deal that is.
Huge.
And I forget because I was like, I don't know, I was in eighth grade or ninth grade, whatever, when this movie came out. And it didn't like matter to me. And it was like, oh my God, Kevin Costner and Whitney Houston.
And it's a romance movie.
Exactly.
You know?
But like objectively, and especially to a lot of the black people in this documentary, they're like, no, this was groundbreaking.
It was groundbreaking in the sense that you had an African-American woman and a white man.
Why is I Will Always Love You a number one song for 14 weeks in a row? Because it's on the soundtrack of a movie about a failed romance between a white guy and a black woman at a time of racial division in the United States, at a time when we can't all just get along.
And the movie was so loved, and
yes.
Because the ending, I mean, is it a spoiler? Because the movie's this long. Like, they don't end up together.
Is that right? I don't remember.
They realize, like, we loved each other.
Why don't you
tell
what happened in The Crying Game, too, Jillian? Just ruin all the movies for
me. Shut up. But just like Casablanca, which I'm sorry, you should all have seen that already. But that's why it was compared to that, because it was like this great love story. And then they realize, like, I have to let her go. I have to let him go. They just, their worlds wouldn't work together.
Uh-huh.
So it would, because, like, then, like, imagine being compared to Casablanca.
I know.
Like, that's huge.
I know. And it was, to see Whitney talking about it, being like, I was so nervous on the first day of shooting,
right?
You know, and that movie is—it's just iconic.
And also, not that long after Kevin Costner called Madonna's show neat. So, like, just when you think Whitney can't get any bigger and more successful, like, you know, like her, she's winning Grammys, she's breaking boundaries, she's doing The Fucking Bodyguard, right?
Yeah.
And now Kirk, her friend and musician, is now like that. He tells us about the sax solo. He's like, that's actually me.
Yeah.
And so Whitney would say to her, like, incredibly talented musicians, you know, when you get other gigs, like, if you want to use my name, if you think it'll help, fine, but it's not always going to help.
Yeah, and that's because right now the drug rumors are starting.
Right.
And we learn, apparently, her brother Michael was on Oprah in the 90s.
Did you introduce her to drugs?
I would say, yeah, it's painful. You know, I feel responsible for it. I let it go so far, and it just got out of hand.
He gave her cocaine on her 16th birthday.
Oh.
So he, like, admits that he introduced her to drugs.
They sort of say that, like, Whitney Houston just has the kind of personality that when she, like, found drugs, it became something that she did a lot very quickly.
Sure.
And I honestly think that I have that similar personality, which is why I've never tried cocaine or anything like that, because I think I would really like it and I would probably never look back.
God help us. You don't need it, by the way.
I know. And thank God, if I ever did it, like, who knows what would happen.
God, please don't ever do it. Cocaine's the fucking worst.
I won't, but like they say that the Bobby relationship really didn't help things because he was like that too. And it just seemed the way they described them in this documentary, and I really don't know a lot about their relationship, but like they were just fire together at all times.
Codependent is the word that they use.
Yes.
So they were doing drugs together.
They were codependent and they were combustible together.
Yeah. I mean, that tracks. That's not an uncommon tale in situations like this, right? So their relationship is described as codependent. And then they have a baby and her name is Bobby Christina.
And they say, so this happens in 1993. This documentary gives us no dates. I Googled dates for everything.
I know.
So it's a year after The Bodyguard, 1993, when Bobby Christina is born.
Whitney as a mother, that was the number one thing in her life. She loved being Bobby Chris's mother. She loved that baby with her whole heart. And as a mother, she wanted to protect her and give her the best that she could possibly do.
She's checked every box. She's done everything. She wanted to be a mother, and finally she was.
And now I have to tell you something. Bobby Christina died in almost the exact same way that Whitney did.
I mean, also, like, they just jump right fucking to that.
And guess what? They don't talk about it, but we will because it's on the calendar. There's an episode about Bobby Christina's death.
Oh, okay, good.
So it's coming up soon. It's not next week, but it's in like a week. It's in like 2 or 3 weeks.
She died. So Bobby Christina, I looked this up. She died from a combination of drowning and drug intoxication on July 26, 2015.
She was found in a bathtub like her mother.
Like, oh my God.
It's so heartbreaking.
And they say that, like, you know, because we get like 5 minutes of Whitney on talk shows talking about being a mother and you stop living for yourself and you live for your kid and it's all I care about. And somebody says, if Whitney knew then that she was going to die young and then that her daughter was going to die even younger and in exactly the same way.
And her daughter had like a very tumultuous relationship at the time too.
Yes.
Like the parallels are heartbreaking and frightening. So we will get into that in a few weeks.
It's just so crazy what we do to these people, like these artists, like that they are surrounded by people who won't say no to them. And because like they get to a point where they wouldn't tolerate no, it's not, you know, and it's like,
it's a mess. Like no one can win. And again, you can't help someone who doesn't want to be helped, but then they're so famous that like the bartender's not going to cut them off or like, you know, she's too powerful.
In 1996, she makes the movie The Preacher's Wife,
which is what was also a major hit. But Whitney is saying, like, she's very open about what she's doing because she says like she was doing drugs every single day while she was filming that movie.
They say she's already in a free fall.
So now we jump to March 2000.
Yeah.
And Whitney was supposed to perform at the Oscars.
More details are emerging about Whitney Houston's absence from the Oscars. The Academy says that the decision to drop her from a musical segment was reached by the show's producers, musical directors Burt Bacharach and Don Was, and Houston herself.
She was part of the decision for her not to do the performance.
And so that's when, you know, her friends Kirk, the musician, and people are saying, like, when the drug use is preventing you from doing something that's a major part of your career, that is when you know it's really, really a problem.
Well, and we jump, like, right around the same time was the Michael Jackson 30th anniversary performance. I don't really know exactly what that is, but she was performing at it. And Don Lemon is scandalized. But then we see the images of Whitney Houston, and she looks, I mean, she just looks, I don't know what to say.
Sick. She looks sick. Unwell.
She's so, so skinny. You can see all of her bones.
Yes. Yeah. And it was a performance on par with, just for like the younger people, Britney's Gimme More performance at the VMAs. That was super fucking tragic.
Oh, is that right?
It was just the same level. Britney, it just felt like she was marking it, and it just, she was not well. And she, like, Britney, like the performer that she is, and she was like asleep during, you know, she looked like a zombie, and it was like people were making fun of her, and I'm like, she's in trouble.
Uh-huh.
Like, this is sad and scary. And it was that level of like, when you're on this like big 30-year tribute or whatever, well, people are gonna notice.
And when you're that skinny, you just look sick. Like, it's very clear. And she was wearing a small, skimpy dress. So you can just really see all of the contours of her body. And one of her friends, her hairstylist, is here to say, I took her into the bathroom after that performance and said, like, if you don't stop whatever you're doing, you're going to die.
Right.
And she, like, burst into tears and said, I know.
Right. Right. So now it's 2002, and Whitney goes on Diane Sawyer.
December 4th. Don Lemon is here again. He's scandalized once more. He just goes, Whitney.
What was the latest thing that Don Lemon did?
He got fired from CNN for making ageist comments against women.
Oh, God.
I know.
Thanks,
it's
a
like
lot.
Fucking, even the gays.
You know, he was like not great to Lori when Damian and Lori went on.
Oh, really? He seems like kind of a fucking prick.
He did. He said some horrible, like, oh, so you're like one of those women who like writes to people in prison. Like some, I watched it live and we were like texting.
Oh, my God. Break. Hashtag not all gays. I swear some of us are great.
And Lori, of course, handled it beautifully.
Of course.
But still, like, stop it. But she goes on, and all of her friends are like, she was high during that interview.
But I mean, this is the one where she's saying to Diane Sawyer,
first of all, let's get one thing straight. Crack is cheap. I make too much money to ever smoke crack. Let's get that straight, okay? We don't do crack. We don't do that. Crack is whack.
I'm too rich to do crack.
I'm too rich to do crack.
That, her words.
And then she says, crack is whack. It's only cringy because, like, she's a person we all love and admire and care about so much, and she's clearly struggling.
And she's high. So, and while she's saying, I used to do drugs, but that's all under control now, and I'm not doing it anymore. And you can see on her face, like, that's not Whitney.
Right.
She's not there anymore.
Yeah, and she definitely has that kind of attitude that, like, it just feels like she's in pain.
Yeah.
You know?
But at the same time, like, there were enablers all around her.
Of course.
But if she is going to go, like, she doesn't want the help right now.
Right.
And there's only so much
you can do.
And when you're rich and powerful, like Whitney Houston undeniably was,
yep.
What do you do?
You can't do anything.
Unless you get off the money train and you walk away.
Well, and I think the other thing that you don't do is call into the Wendy Williams show.
Okay, so
here we go.
Whitney goes on the Wendy Williams show back when it was a radio show.
So Wendy Williams, I think the tea on this is that Wendy Williams was like, quote, speculating wildly about Whitney Houston all the time and the drug use and just really—
She's talking like, a lot of shit.
Talking a lot of shit, yes.
So it was a debacle to say the least.
I mean, this is like legendary.
They get in a massive fight on the air because Wendy is asking her about her drug use. And Whitney's like, who are you talking to? Like, are you talking to me?
Yes.
And Wendy's like, yeah, I am. And so they get in this massive fight. And it's like, Wendy, what is the point of this?
I mean, the point is that we're still talking about it literally 20 years
later. And she wanted the ratings.
Of course.
She wanted like every, like calling people like turn on Wendy Williams because she's fighting with Whitney Houston.
Exactly.
But like, and that it was a shitty thing to do.
Yep.
It was not helpful. And Wendy, honestly, like you come out looking like the asshole too.
She definitely does. And it's also just like, who on Whitney's team was like, you know what? This is a good idea for you to do. Why don't you go ahead and make that call?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
She was going to do it anyway.
Uh-huh.
Like, no one tells Whitney Houston what to do.
Uh-huh. And it's like, why, Whitney says, like, I hear you talking about me every day. And it's like, right. Why are you listening? It's like, how many times have I had to say to everybody in my life, don't read the iTunes reviews?
Oh, God.
You know
I can't remember the last time I read them.
I know. I only do it when I get, like, drunk and it's a Saturday night and Steve's already gone to bed. I'm like, let me see what people are saying.
You learn that very early.
You have to.
To stay away.
Yes. Go write us a good review. If you love us, go write us a good review.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
So it's March 2004, and Whitney starts going to rehab.
So Whitney went into rehab three times, and each time she didn't stick around all that long, instead choosing to leave and go into outpatient therapy.
She probably negotiated a way to an outpatient program, which as caretakers we're often stuck doing because patients aren't, we can't hold them against their will. She should have been in treatment for 6 months, period.
Dr. Drew is here to just say, like, we can't hold people against their will. And he says she should have been in treatment for 6 months straight,
right.
Period. No visitors, no contact. I mean, maybe she would still be with us if that had happened,
but
you
like,
know?
And then I'm just thinking, like, people shouldn't be this famous.
I know.
Like, it's not good for you to be this famous and be so, like, she was so scrutinized, and this was before the internet.
Yeah.
But, I mean, not before the internet, but, like, it was a different world than it is today. Like, things are happening in real time online now.
Yeah.
Like, you can follow things happen in real time. And so, just imagine back then what it was like. Like, it's so hard. Like, I can't imagine what
and,
it would be like
you
now.
Know, and the tricks that addiction plays on your brain. Like, you check yourself into rehab today because you want to quit and you want to get sober. And then you wake up tomorrow morning and your body is
right.
Literally playing tricks on you. And you feel like you don't want to get clean and sober anymore. So you check yourself out because you're Whitney Houston.
And then since the 80s, everyone's been telling you how great you are, which she is.
Yes.
And no one's been saying no to her, which they should have been.
But
and
it's
so,
like, how many times do we have to learn this lesson? Like, River Phoenix, Kurt Cobain, Whitney Houston.
I know.
We see this all the time.
I know. now.
And like, to the fucking assholes around these people who are the yes people because they want the money, play the long game.
I know.
The longer she stays alive, the more money you're going to get in the long run. If we have to think about it that way, can we trick these assholes into playing the long game?
Right, even in the most cynical way.
Yes.
Yeah, keeping her alive is good for everybody.
It's good for everybody.
Like her, especially. And humanity, especially the world.
Her fucking kid, like her child, you know?
So this is all happening. Like, this is so not healthy. She's tormented. Like, she's like, she needs help. Bobby Brown makes a deal for a reality show.
And this is so wild to me. It's called Being Bobby Brown. I remember this. I cannot for the life of me understand why she agreed to this.
So it was a show about them, but it was his name.
Yes.
But they were married.
And it was kind of like she like wasn't contracted to be in every episode. Like, it was just kind of like she'd be there when she was there. It's the only reason anybody made the show.
Obviously.
Bobby Brown's not getting a reality show about his life.
No. But this, I know that this is like the time where these were all the rage and all the celebrities were doing it. But this one in particular feels really sad and weird. Like, we shouldn't be watching it. Like, it's too much of a glimpse into behind the curtain.
And the drug use. I mean, like, that. Yeah. Like, that's what you feel like you're seeing it in real time. She's at, like, a Marshall's shopping for jewelry like she's me.
We're seeing it, like, we're seeing everything but the actual doing of the drugs.
Uh-huh.
But then she'll like come out of a bath. It's just like, it's
she's
so
like
scary.
Stomping
and sad.
Her way through the mall screaming she's hungry like Daisy.
It's just, oh God.
I know.
It's just, and it's so uncomfortable. It's like, who okayed this?
Well, and I think the thing that it's just like, what's so sad, A, we know how it's gonna end. And B, it's like, oh God, you were the goat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You were the greatest. You were the, like you said, you just shouldn't be this famous. I think the bottom line is when somebody becomes that famous, there's only one way it can end.
God.
You know what I mean? At least that's how it used to be. Maybe it's not so much like that anymore.
I have to believe that it's not like that anymore.
But you know what? Now we learn that, like, guess what? Their marriage isn't great.
It was a long union, but it was a very tumultuous one. There were so many incidents of drug abuse, of erratic behavior, arrests.
The ups and the downs. And I remember this moment, like when he was in prison for something and he gets out and there's Whitney running and like jumping into his arms.
Yeah.
They loved each other, but it wasn't a good marriage.
It's not good. So finally, they divorced in 2007 after 15 years of marriage.
Guess who's thrilled? Don Lemon is thrilled. He is thrilled. He says she can get her image back, get her voice back, and America loves the comeback story, baby.
Well, now Gary, her vocal coach, is here, and he's like, Don Lemon, can we sit down for a second? Hold on. Because he was shocked at how Whitney wasn't taking care of her voice. Her voice, that it's, is
I know.
Her voice.
I know.
And he said she destroyed her voice. She had no voice left. Even like when she speaks, you can tell how damaged her voice is.
She goes on Good Morning America to like do a concert. Now they play maybe 30 seconds of it in the episode. I went and watched the whole thing.
Oh no.
It is so sad.
Oh, God.
She cannot, she's got like a 2 or 3 note range. She tries to belt at one point. And you can tell that she can tell it's not going well.
She has to, right?
I mean, and the thing is, it's like when like Liza gets up to sing now, no one expects it to sound good. You just love being in the same room with her.
And she like sing talks.
Exactly.
She's not like
that's what Whitney was doing, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then they say like she didn't have the self-awareness to watch that moment and be like, I need more time. She launches a world tour.
Yeah, she just needs to take care of herself. And I understand what it must feel like to be like, everyone's watching me. I have to prove I can do it. Like, everyone's been talking shit about me for 20 years. Like, my 15-year marriage to Bobby Brown, like, she wants to prove everybody wrong, but she's not taking care of herself.
No, and she's definitely still doing drugs. And this is where we get the whole thing about her inner circle. And, like, even, like, everyone we've met in the documentary, like, her saxophone player, her hairstylist, her vocal coach, all of them are like,
Whitney's inner circle was not any place that we ever got, those of us who played with her. There was a wall that was very meticulously built by the folks who really were inside, and that was to keep certain people out and keep certain people in.
We were intentionally kept out.
I mean, that's what happens, right?
Yeah.
They were isolated.
And even Clive Davis says to one of her friends, what can I do for her? And this is where somebody says, Whitney eclipsed him. She was more famous than Clive Davis. Even he couldn't get to her.
Right. And Kirk, the sax player, says like there was a wall that really kept specifically people in and specifically people out. And Kirk was one of the ones that they kept out. I mean, obviously, right?
Yeah.
So it's February 2012, and it's the Clive Davis Grammy party.
So we're back to where we started. We're back to the very beginning. And she gets to LA a few days before the Grammys for the Clive Davis party. And we're back to the bar. Apparently, she's at the bar at her hotel getting, quote, hammered and complaining that her drinks are watered down.
She's picking fights with the bartenders.
I know. I don't know what I would do. I would run for the Hollywood Hills.
Yeah.
If Whitney Houston got mad at me at the bar, I don't know what I would do.
Yeah, I don't. It's just, it's a mess and it's really sad. And then it's like, but I wasn't.
I know.
Like, I don't know. Or maybe they were as an attempt to try to, like, not say no to Whitney Houston, but make it, like, a single vodka, not a double. Like, I don't know.
Oh, exactly.
What, like, I don't know.
And then, like, the next day is this E! Interview.
This is very famous.
Yeah, it's Clive Davis interviewing Brandy and Monica.
I know.
From, like, That Boy Is Mine.
The Boy Is Mine.
But, like, was that the 90s?
Yes.
Okay, so it was like a...
Maybe it was some anniversary. I don't know. I was just happy to see Brandy and Monica together.
It was, like, Clive in the middle, Brandy on one side, Monica on the other.
And so she interrupts them.
She barges in.
Whitney was trying to be playful and interrupt, but it was doing it in a way that made people think she was high.
Come say hi to your godfather. Okay. Come say hi to your goddad.
It wasn't until I was close to her where I could smell alcohol, I could smell cigarettes, but it became very clear that obviously she was not completely 100% herself.
She has no idea that it's even an interview. Like, uh-huh. I think in her mind, I'm not making a joke. I just think that she's like, there are three people sitting here. Like, she has no idea that it's a set and the lights are there. And, like, her hair is wet. Her clothes are wet. It feels like she just got out of the pool from being in her clothes in some way.
And you can see the look on Clive Davis's face. Even Brandy and Monica, who probably, like, to them, Whitney Houston is, like, a legendary goddess.
They wouldn't be here without her.
Exactly. And, like, even everyone looks so uncomfortable except for Whitney. Whitney, who's grabbing Bobby Christina's hand and saying, go say hi to your godfather.
It's a mess. And everyone's like, the cameras are on. No one wants to react. Like, everyone's trying to be very careful here.
And they say that, like, it felt like she was trying to be playful, like, playfully interrupt, but it wasn't working. And they're saying she was definitely high.
She was just like, her hair was wet. Her clothes are wet. Then the next night, because remember, this is like February 9th, a few days before the Grammys.
Yeah.
The next night, she picks a fight with someone from the X Factor.
She goes to a party for a person named Kelly Price, who they say, like, we're supposed to know who that is.
From the X Factor, I guess.
No, Kelly Price is, like, the person, and then there's a person from the X Factor in the audience, and apparently Whitney Houston picks a fight with this X Factor person to the point where, like, she's bloodied and beaten up.
Because she thinks that the X Factor was hitting on her date.
Can you imagine being the contestant from the X Factor? You're Leona Lewis.
Who, again, is only here because of Whitney Houston, I'm sure.
And you're throwing punches at Whitney Houston to the point where she's bleeding. We see pictures of Whitney Houston with blood on her legs as she's leaving the club.
I think punches were coming from all directions
My, it's a melee.
It's a melee. All hell broke loose.
I'm saying it was Leona Lewis.
Okay, great.
I'm saying that's who it was.
So now it's February 11th, the day before the Grammys, 2012, and her personal assistant finds her in the tub.
Yeah, she's the one who finds the body.
Whitney's face down, and again, the water is so hot, 93.5 degrees, and she was there for an hour. So if the water had an hour to cool.
I know.
And it was still.
Oh, God, I know. And it's 3:30 in the afternoon.
And so the toxicology report comes back and there are just an insane amount of drugs in her
system.
This
is when Dr. Drew says, like, she was severely addicted to drugs.
Right.
Anybody who reads the autopsy report will be able to tell you.
Right. And he says, like, here are some possibilities of what happened. Like, a lot of these drugs were sedatives. So there is an excellent chance that she wanted to take a bath and she just fell asleep because of the drugs and she drowned that way. And she was, you know.
But it also could have been any mixture of the drugs that were in her system, like, reacting with each other. What they're saying is that
the police found a mixture of drugs. They found numerous prescription medication. They found the spoon with a powder on it.
She may have had a cardiac rhythm disturbance from the cocaine and sudden death. So we don't know really for sure exactly what killed her. We know for sure it's a substance death.
It's actually not possible to pinpoint how she actually died.
He said maybe her heart stopped from all the cocaine. Like, every possibility is worse than the one before.
Yeah.
And it's also like, why was she alone?
I know.
And why was she alone for an hour? Like, everyone around her knows that she's in trouble. Even if, again, the most cynical way, right?
Yeah.
You're going to be the one who brings her the drugs. Don't leave her alone.
I know.
She's so famous and she's so troubled and she's
been... where's the inner circle now? The people who, like, helped her get to this point, like, leaving her alone in a bathroom.
This is after interrupting Clive Davis. This is after the bartender fight. This is after the fight with the X Factor person. And she's still being left alone in a state where we don't know what combination of drugs caused her death.
I know.
Like, who left her alone?
And I just remember hearing it on the news. Like, it was such a shock.
Like, oh my God.
Whitney Houston is
dead. The night before the Grammys?
I know. And also not a shock. I think to a lot of people who were paying attention, like, people just kind of saw this coming.
Right. And I guess, like, we were still, I mean, we were very deep in the tabloids that, like, she was documented for those couple days leading up to it. She was getting in fights all the time.
Yeah.
You know? So it was the worst possible outcome.
And then, of course, like, upon her death, all of her albums but one shoot back to the top of the charts.
Right.
Her greatest hits album sells a million copies in a week.
Yeah. And, like, and it ends with basically everyone saying that, like, we're just going to remember her as a fantastic singer because her talent was singular. I mean, no one is like her. And no one's perfect. God knows I'm not. Jesus Christ. Right. And I'm no Whitney Houston in any sense of the term.
Oh my God, girl, we did. What is it called?
So it's the show What Really Happened. And also, like, don't name it that if you're not going to tell us.
Uh-huh.
That's number one. But it's the final days of Whitney Houston, and this is on Discovery Plus.
Oh my God, fam. Hey, listen, we just kicked off our tour at the Wilbur. It was an incredible show, I'm assuming. We haven't actually done it
yet. We're in the past, present, and future, but it was great. It was great. It's going to be great.
It's going to be so good. Up next, June 17th in Charlotte, then July 13th in Denver. See the rest of our dates at truecrimeobsessed.com. Can I also tell you that I'm going to be in Nashville with the Traveling Book Party on June 21st. There's only a handful of shows left to see me do the book party before the book comes out in September. So come see me, patrickfails.com.
Go bring your bachelorette party. Nashville's a major bachelorette party city.
Oh my God, if you have a bachelorette party that week, bring them.
Bring
I will make it.
Wouldn't
I will
that
wear
be so fun?
A penis hat. I will do whatever you want.
It's a nice little sash.
Totally.
It's a major bachelorette town.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's one of the only places I've ever been where you see them. They have the bikes outside. It's like a traveling bar.
They call them
bar.
The Woo Girl. Remember when we were there? I was like, what is that noise? It was just like, woo! And I was like, what is that? And they were like, and I was like, look, woo it up, have
it
fun.
Up.
I'm just saying, I was told that's
but
the
remember,
term.
Like, you have to pedal the bar? Like, you're on a
bike. I think it's more, it's mostly like,
is
I don't
motorized?
Think they, well, someone is driving it because you're hammered.
Okay.
So someone's at the front of it, and then there are like four seats on either side. And I think you're just pedaling
for
the fun. We
should do that sometime when we're in Nashville.
Okay. Okay. Fun.
Girl, what are we doing next?
Okay, we are doing Debunking the Myth of Patient Zero, the AIDS Super Spreader. And this is a documentary that's on YouTube.
So we are doing this for Pride, fam. This is a story that's kind of close to my heart. His name is Gaetan Dugas.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Canadian flight attendant, and he was blamed by the great, great, great journalist and author, Randy Schultz, of being like Patient Zero and being the person who spread AIDS throughout North America.
Uh-huh.
It's not really true, and we're going to learn his story. And I'm so excited to share that documentary with everybody.
It's on YouTube. You can. It's very readily available.
All right. Well, stay tuned for the trailer for that and our funny and hilarious and ridiculous outtakes.
Oh, God.
And we love you.
Okay, we love you.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Patient Zero was a man, a central victim and victimizer.
The most widespread part is the idea that this is the man who introduced AIDS to North America.
I don't know whether he actually brought the epidemic to the country, but he certainly was the person who spread it from one end of the country to the other.
There's just so much wrong about the concept of a patient zero.
The second part is that not only did he cause the epidemic by being the first case, but he was somehow doing it deliberately, that he was trying to spread his infection far and wide across the United States and beyond.
He reportedly crisscrossed North America, feeding an enormous homosexual appetite with hundreds of liaisons.
It's funny to say, Gaetan always used to say to me, one day I'll be a star. Well, he might be a star now, you know, like, he was known, like, people knew him, but I don't think that's what he meant when he said, one day I'll be a star, darling. Okay.
I was just reading a thing about Ryan Reynolds that, like, he will come home in his costume from shooting that day because he cannot get off the set fast enough and home to his family fast enough.
I mean, I love Ryan Reynolds, but the wardrobe people must fucking hate him.
I know.
Can
I
you
know,
just
I know.
Have but the t-shirt and jeans ready to go?
I love that there's, like, a sign in the wardrobe department that's like, Ryan Reynolds
just
must
let him
be
go.
Protected at all costs.
Yeah, just let him go.
Just let him go. I just love that he gets to hang out with Robin Lively, Blake's older sister, who was the star of The Worst Witch.
Oh,
I'm hot,
yes.
And you're not. And yep. If you want to hang
top
with me,
that.
I'll give it one shot. Top that.
Top
stop that.
That.
I don't really give a about trying to top that.
Let's get back to Whitney.
Okay.
From Whitney Houston to that, you know what? Let's top that. Let's top it.
Why is God imbuing people with this kind of talent? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If she was just a good singer, it'd be fine. This isn't going to happen to Pink.
Hey.
I love Pink.
I love Pink.
But my point is Pink not an excellent singer? She's an excellent singer. Is she Whitney Houston level?
No.
Okay. That's my point. Everybody should be as talented as Pink. That should be the end of it.
But I'm going to be very careful here.
Okay.
Can Whitney do it on a trapeze?
You know that other thing? I don't think it's going to work out. The rumor is he was talking about the bodyguard.
Shut up.
That
oh, yeah.
she was up for the bodyguard and that he wasn't going to hire
And then
her.
She did Dick Tracy and all is right with the world. Everyone did what they were supposed to
is
do.
Is this our gayest episode of all time? This might be our gayest episode. I feel like I ask you that every week.
I fucking love Dick Tracy. It's such a good movie.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.